Welcome to Greycast, exploring the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. This podcast is all about bringing the classic World of Greyhawk setting to life through Greyhawk creators, Greyhawk lore, Greyhawk streamers, Greyhawk stories, and of course, the vibrant Greyhawk community of gamers. Thank you for tuning in, and let the exploration of Dungeons & Dragons' most classic and revered setting, the World of Greyhawk, begin now.
Well, man, it's time for another episode of Greycast. Welcome, Greyhawkians, and tonight we're flying solo, as in no guests, so I guess it's duo. Myself and our beloved co-host, Mateus. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing all right. So we're going to attempt a thing.
Bird's eye view.
The oldest, by means of recorded history anyway, the oldest human kingdom realm thing in Greyhawk, on the Flaness anyway. The oldest region started off as Flan way back in the way before the CYs, like the negative CYs. And it was, some of the earliest settlements from the big Sulbeck Lunish thingy thing, migrational thing. And yeah, if you're wondering about whether or not it's Keolin, you're right. That's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about Keolin. We're going to try to do it some justice. It's ginormous. I think Mateus and I both agreed ahead of time that nobody on this call is an expert, but we've got notes and there's lots to talk about. This is probably going to turn into like a two-pager, two-episode thing, because there's just so much. So I think our mission tonight, if I understood the chit-chat in Discord earlier, is to kind of do the once-over, the high level, the 10,000-foot view. But I am reading here on Greyhawk Online, the oldest continuously ruled human realm in the Flaness. And if it's in Greyhawk Online, that's good enough for me. So it's in the beloved Sheldamar Valley. So I'm having a peek at my friend Anna Meyer's tremendous map because, man, so good. Let's talk about for a minute the Sheldamar Valley, because, man, is there a lot of stuff in the Sheldamar Valley. It starts up in the north with Bissell, the Barrier Peaks kind of far to the west, and then that arcs around to the Crystal Mist Mountains. The Jotuns jut in from the southwest, the Stark Mountains from the west. But talking about the east side then, Lortmill Mountains, and then starts Bissell, Grand March, Geoff to the west, Sterich to the west, Yeomanry to the west, all the way down to the Hold of the Sea Princes, right down the middle is Bissell, Grand March, and Keolin. And then on the east, bordering the Lortmills, are the three political subdivisions of Ulek, or Ulek, the duchy, the county, and the principality thereof. And that all dumps into the Azure Sea. And so we're going to be concerned tonight with the numerous baronies and so forth that make up Keolin. And so that's what we're going to do.
We're going to try to anyway.
Yeah, that might be the longest introduction in the history of our podcast right there. And deservedly so, because Keolin is big.
Yeah. And we've kind of hit the beginning, and that is where is it on your map? It's in the Sheldamar Valley. There's lots of some, you know, besides your mountains, which you named, some highlights are going to be the Javan River, which is a gigantic river that goes
big
up.
One, yeah, it starts one up in the Barrier Peaks, forms the boundary of numerous countries or realms, if you will.
Realms, it's called them realms. And then you've got the Dreadwood, which probably would be an episode in itself. You got the Rushmoors up in the north. You've got poor Jeff, which has got the Dim Forest, and we've done episodes on Jeff. Poor Jeff and the Giants.
Yeah. Grand Duchy of Jeff.
Yep.
A lot of giants in them, their mountains, giants and dwarves.
Yep. And then you've got like you said, the Ulex, and there's the Axewood and the Silverwood. So there's some good and don't forget the Hul Marshes in the south.
Yes, in the Yeomanry, the League of the Yeomanry, south of that, into the Sea Princes there. And of course, you know, probably one of the most well known adventures for the World of Greyhawk, Saltmarsh, the sinister secret thereof, is in that north of the Sea Princes there.
And so if you're a 5e DM or player, and you've got Ghosts of Saltmarsh, this episode is the background for you. And we'll plug where you can get the written stuff that you can use. The other thing to consider is that sometimes debates happen on whether or not the Pomarge is part of the Sheldamar or not.
Mm.
So I've seen some of that, but the Pomarge, it kind of gets brought in. So does Selene on the other side of the mountains.
Okay.
Selene kind of is involved in the history over here. So the Pomarge and Selene factor when you're thinking about Keelland.
Certainly some strong influence.
And then in the north, that would be Valuna. Valuna and Ket would be the two realms that kind of factor up north. Some of this I'm more familiar with than others. Others I'm only going to be able to give you a very cursory explanation on, but we'll do our best.
Well, let's dive in, shall we?
Sure.
This thing is so old.
It is old.
How old is it? They say, right? Good old. How old is it? So ancient history, where the migrations, the Baclunish and Sewell Imperium, the Sewell Sulawese refugees coming across eastward over the Crystal Mist.
There's that tunnel down there. They came through a tunnel, and there were 12 tribes.
A tunnel.
There's a tunnel down in Yeomanry. It's on Anna. It should be on Anne's map. It's called Salontin's Tunnel. Yeah, there it is. Purple. It's in purple. The Passage of Salontin, it's called.
Mm-hmm.
There were 12 Sewell tribes. I think there were 12. And they crossed through there. What year did they cross through there? Well, minus 412. So let's minus 422 is the Twin Cataclysms. And then in minus 412, the last Mage of Power takes the 12 tribes of noble houses of the Sewell and crosses through into the Yeomanry. And from there, they disperse. Some, as you know, go up north and become the Barbarians. Some go over to the Scarlet Brotherhood. The Tilfinot Peninsula and become the Scarlet Brotherhood, and some settle here in the Keelland Valley. Two in particular that we need to name: the noble House
Neheli.
Yeah, House Neheli and House Rolla. There's also House Tolly, which is not mentioned often, but House Tolly controls Port Tolly, which is part of the Sea Princess. There are a house which I like to call a Medi, because for lack of a better term, there was a tribe that was lost on the way, and then there was a tribe that went down to the Amedio Valley, the Amedio jungle, and became the
Amedi.
So there's these two tribes in the they settle. So they come over in minus 412. In minus 368, they establish Gradsel. So that's an old city.
It is. We're still talking minuses.
Minuses.
And that's House Rolla that establishes Grodsul.
Yep.
What I think is interesting too, right around that time, says here in the, again, Greyhawk Online, within 10 years of that or so, the current capital of the Kiolan Empire,
yep,
Neol Dra, is founded. So it's, I mean, that's 1,000 years old, that city.
Now, yeah, and the other major development here is in minus 358 or 350, let's call this 358 before the common year, BCY, to do something new, but minus 358, the Empire of Vecna falls. There's some sort of internal upheaval that allows Iridian settlers to come down and settle in this region. They're the tribes. So when we hear Iridians, we tend to think of the tribe of the Erdi. This is not the Erdi. These are Iridians of the tribe Keog, K-E-O-G-H. And then they settle in this area, and Eoland is founded in minus 342 CY. And the way it works is there's a council at Neoldra, and there are the gathering of the Iridian tribes and the two Sul noble houses. And the agreement they come to is that the council rules, not the king. This is not your typical monarchy. The council makes the day-to-day decisions, taxes, this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A king is elected from the council, and it is normally chosen from one of the two houses, the Neli or the Rolla, and the Iridians get the deciding vote. That is the agreement they come to. And the first king is of House Neli. And that's kind of the foundation, mm-hmm, of Kiolan. Within 100 years of its founding, the borders of Kiolan reach
pretty much
established
to the current locations.
Yeah, and that's kind of cool.
I think they fluctuate some, like they shrink a bit and then come back, you know, through the, yep, course of this, that, and the other thing over the years, yep, which I suppose is going to happen over 1,000 years. What blows my mind, I'm looking through this timeline you built. You know, you just kind of went through the founding. Now we're, you know, looking forward closer to like the explorer kings, right? So now we're getting into this notion of expansion and so forth. And it's still the same two houses, Neheli and, yep, Roha, through this whole period of time, even once we get into the positive CY common year.
Yeah,
it's right, still those same two houses.
Yep. There are several ages in Kiowish history. You've got the migration up until the age of the explorer kings. You've got these explorer kings. They're called the explorer kings because they go down and they discover the Amedeo. They go below the Amedeo and discover the Isle of Dread and come on back up there. So these are literally explorer kings, kings who go out into the deep south of the Flannis and explore things. And then after those kings, there's 200 years called the Slumbering, where things just kind of cool off.
Less exploration, very calm and peaceful, just not a lot.
Yep.
Not a lot happening.
I'm just making sure we're not missing anything. Yep. And then from 286 to 488, you have a very important age in Kiowish history, and that is the Imperial Age. The big name that everybody remembers and knows in Kiolan is Tavish the First. He also known as Tavish the Great. They Where is that? They basically, let's not get down into the weeds. There is a lot of expansion here.
Yeah, this starts what they call the Imperial Age.
Yep.
And, you know, just based on what we know about current affairs, right? Imperialism, not to be confused with the dun, 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 dun,
that's right.
Different imperialism. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but here comes the expansion time. Absolutely. Yep.
And he was the Knights of the Watch, or a power group here. They're established during this time.
Yep.
And that's up in Bissell's Concord. They're just expanding up in the north there. Jeff gets incorporated during this time. And then in 348 CY, they have the Wheelson Proclamation. This is Keoland declaring their manifest destiny to control the entire Sheldamar Valley. This is, you know, baked into this time period that it is their job to control this whole timeline. Now, what we need to know for the current affairs as we do this is get back to my map here. The yeomanry, I might be off in my time here. Starich, Jeff, the Yeomanry, the three Uleks are all in the Grand March. We're all at one point part of Keoland.
Yeah, it's part of that whole, when they're talking Sheldamar Valley, they're talking Sheldamar Valley, like from mountains to mountains, which of course incorporates Starich, Joff, the Uleks. And in fact, there's a point here at 350 CY. No, wait a minute. Where did I see it? Oh, under the Wheelson Proclamation, the Prince of Ulek even refuses to disavow the proclamation. So there was this allyship that was happening where it's, the Ulek folks didn't even dispute it. Like, yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good.
By the way, that prince, he's still the Prince of Ulek in current Greyhawk because he's a dwarf.
I was going to say he must be sort of old.
He's a dwarf and he's aged, but he remembers the days when
Prince Korond.
Yep, Korond.
Of Ulek.
Yep. Then things start going bad. Things start going bad for them. They bite off more than they can chew, and there's a whole string
Well, they take the Pomarch.
They take
attack Valuna.
Yep.
And all of a sudden now we have things happening along the coast.
Yep.
Yeomanry secedes. Yep.
The Yeomanry secedes. Yep. And now notice this. This is important. The demi-human Ulek states secede from the throne. That is precisely what the box set says. The demi-human. There is one Ulek state which never seceded, and that is the County of Ulek, because it is in the box set, it is called, and in your LGG, it's called the same thing, a County Palatinate, which means it is a Palatinate County belongs to another country. But the Count Palatinate has almost royal authority in his region. So the County of Ulek is part of Keoland. They're not a separate country. That means they would send their nobles to the Council of Nealdra, but they're pretty much independent in how they run their own country. That they have a lot of leeway and independence. The same thing is true of Starich. Starich was an earldom up until the 590s, where it becomes a marchland, which would have a marquis. Jeff is a duchy. Jeff is part of Keoland. They send their nobles to Nealdra as part of it. But we don't think of we can't think of Keoland like other kingdoms where the king has all power. This is like a a confederation of nobles. The ruling force is not the king. He's the leader of the army and head of government, so to speak. But the people making the day-to-day decisions is the council.
Right. They're running the business of it.
They're running the business.
It's interesting. During this imperial time, they even got as far north, they threatened Verbabank.
Yes.
I mean, man.
Yep.
They really stretched the borders, or attempted to stretch the borders, at least.
Yep. Yeah. So that means when you're doing stuff with Keoland, you need to look up Grand March Jeff, Ulex, Bissell, Sterich, Yeomanry, and the Sea Princes. Because Jeff, Sterich, and the County of Ulek and the Grand March are all technically part of Keoland proper, even though they have quasi-autonomy, and that's why they get their own separate entries.
The Sterich bit is interesting. It's an earldom, and right before, I think this was, no, I think it was, I don't, when did the Greyhawk Wars start? What year was that?
582, I think.
Okay, so during that, King Stott of the Keoland tried to get the Earl of Sterich to declare fealty to the Keoish crown, so on and so forth, and he neglected to do so. Yep. And so when all of the giants began to pillage and rape and burn and destroy through Sterich, King Stott sent no help.
Scotty,
not Stott. Where did that come from?
The way I understand that is this little line. It says that he treated them as a brother.
Yeah, they were close. They had a close personal relationship.
And so at some point during this close personal relationship, now remember, this guy's an earl and he's the king, but he's virtually independent, this earl. And so the king comes along and says, okay, it's time that you recognize that I am your king and you are my vassal, and I want the money from those mines. If you give me the money from those mines, I will help you. And that's not so much the king, but it's also the council saying that too. The council delays when the giants come. The council delays, and the king does too, sending forces to help Jeff, Yeomanry, and Sterich, because they tried to use the situation to gain more direct control over these regions, which were semi-autonomous but still part of the team, so to speak. And that's kind of interesting. You can take that a couple different ways as you move the timeline forward in your campaign. In my campaign, now this is not canon, this is my campaign. In my campaign, the next king after him seizes upon a crisis, acts the opposite way, and wins their fealty back. And so Yeomanry rejoins, and I have a few other things like that. But really, in the 580s and 590s, Scotty is, or Kimbertos, however you want to call him, he really has egg on his face, because the giants came and you did nothing to help us.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I mean, you know, the earldom paid in blood and destruction, because the giants marched and just scorched earth Sterich, all the way to Istvan within weeks. And so the Keoish armies had to retake Sterich,
and the Sterich
hot mess.
The Earl, there's a Dungeon Magazine adventure that takes place in the capital of Sterich, and the Earl is in the dungeon and he dies, and the whole place becomes a marchland like Grand March.
Right.
So that means the Marquis there, or the Marquess,
it is female. Yep.
They have pretty much total control there, even though they're technically part of Keeleland. They would send their nobles to the council, and they would get a say in the decisions made. And
as is customary with these kind of feudal lands with baronies and duchies and various noble families, all they do is interfight amongst themselves in Sterich. So, they're just a non-factor other than their representation in the council. And they have their marquianess there, yeah. But it's just a hot mess because of all the infighting and confusion and people, after the giants, claiming this is theirs and that's theirs. And,
right.
It's a hot mess.
And so after this imperial era, there is the modern era, and there's a bunch of Nelly kings who are pretty crappy, and Keeleland goes back to being kind of insular, and then you have Scotty Kimbertoss taking, and he's not from either of those clans.
Oh, a new house, Lizal.
Yep,
and it makes its. I'm looking back. I don't see where that came from. Just one of the noble houses. Because the king Trevlian dies without an heir. This guy was a ranger lord from a province all the way out near Dreadwood.
Yep.
With very, very, weak or little known actual blood ties to the throne. And so, there you have it.
And remember, the heir is not chosen by right of primogeniture.
Right.
It's chosen. The council chooses, and so they have the habit of choosing. If you've got a competent heir, they tend to choose it, but they have no problem switching back and forth. And so, they voted this guy in. So that's important to see. And that helps you see how Keeleland is different. The council in Neoldra is big. So the king doesn't he's almost like a constitutional monarch in the sense he's a figurehead. He controls the army, but he doesn't have quite as much power as say the overking in the Great Kingdom did, any of the other kings in the Flannis. He's got to make sure his council's on base. And that makes for a very different dynamic, I think. And then what changes is insular keeping to yourself stuff kind of ends in 590 when Keeleland invades the holds of the Sea Princes. Remember, the hold went to hell in a handbasket.
Well, the Scarlet Brotherhood.
Yep. Yep.
Got all up in there, and Knight of the Death List, right?
Yeah,
Scarlet Brotherhood kills 27 of the 30 petty nobles the Hold of the Sea Princes, and so the Sea Princes go from 30 to 3.
that's right, and they capitulate very quickly at that.
Yeah, sure, to the Sea Prince.
Yep, that's right, and then following that in 589. There is a big coup, within the Sea Princes and all slave uprisings, and the whole place goes to hell. So then, seeing the chaos in the Sea Princes, Keeleland invades, because throughout this history, Keeleland has fought with the Sea Princes. And so in 590, they invade and they capture Westkeep. And, they are poised, it says in the Gazetteer, to attempt to retake the hold. And I asked Gary Hollian, who wrote the LGG entry on this, and the LGJ one, which we'll talk about again maybe at the end. And I asked him, does Keeleland get the hold back? And he's like, given the state that the LGG left it, yeah, but it would take a long, grueling decades and decades of fighting. That was his assessment. That eventually, Kielan probably, it's a good bet that they would capture the hold of the Seen Princes, but with much blood and lots of fighting. So, I mean, there's a whole campaign there. I think we kind of cover the history there. There's lots of little things that you could, that we could talk about. Maybe we need to do another episode where we go back into some of the nitty gritty details. That's what I think. But we've given you a kind of a rough overview of Kielan, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a location that's absolutely awesome for political intrigue and long-standing relationships between noble houses and noble houses infighting, and boy, oh boy, there's a billion adventure hooks that you could play in here. And there's, you know, there's also plenty of published adventure just through here. You know, you have all the Sea Princess stuff. You have Salt Marsh, the Hool Marshes, if you're into, you know, like with Jay Scott and Carlos Lysing wrote. There's just no end. You know, again, the Pomarge is part of this. There's all kinds of cool stuff associated with that lovely peninsula.
Yep. The Cannon Fire website has an adventure locator. So if you want to look for adventures, you can actually go up there. But I'm pretty sure Baltar's Beacon is in this area. I'm pretty sure the Lizard King one, is that I-1 or I-2 or something like that?
Oh, the Tomb of the Lizard King?
Yes, I'm pretty sure that's in Kielan as well.
And traditionally, if I'm not mistaken, the Keep on the Borderlands is believed to have been located in the Yeomanry, if you're not playing that it is in Mystara.
That's right.
Kind of the default Greyhawk location is somewhere in the Yeomanry League.
That's right. That's from the 20th anniversary edition. Has it down there. There's lots of and there's adventures in you could have the Dreadwood. You have adventures up in Jeff trying to Kiowish forces, the Knights of the Watch up there, the Knights of Dispatch, knighthoods you can be part of in this region can do their thing. If you're a magic user inclined person, there's the Silent Ones of Kielan.
The Valley of the Mage.
Valley of the Mage is kind of there
of Jeff.
Yep.
We're getting ready to start a campaign. I'm trying to think when this will drop. The campaign will have started by the time this session drops, but on the Wily Hobbit Twitch channel, for a brief shameless plug, we're going to be firing up the second narrative arc of the Secrets of the Flen Ess. So the second secret of the Flen Ess, and we're going to be playing in Starich, and we're going to be running through the giant modules. Great. So I'm presently digging through all of the cool history and all that of Starich and the giant incursions and the death and destruction. And so that's going to be fun. Again, so that's, you know, the giant modules are right there in that, all three of them are right in that neck of the woods. The steading of in fact, they're on Anna's map. The steading of the Hill Giant Chief is just southeast of Headwater in southern Starich. The Hold of Drugnir is south of that in the Crystal Mists. And then the, what's it called? Where the Fire Giant at Muspelheim is just where the Hornwood, that longest finger into the mountains, the Crystal Mist Mountains, that's right where Muspelheim, the Fire Giant stronghold is. So hotbed of good published adventure stuff.
Yeah. And so Sam mentioned this last week, but I wanted to, or last episode, he mentioned this, but if you're a DM and you're sitting down and you're thinking, how do I get all this information on Kielan? You have to remember that Kielan technically includes Jeff Sterich, the Grand March, Heel and Proper, and the County of Ulek. The County of Ulek is a human. The Duchy of Ulek is an elven realm, loyal to Selene, and the Principality of Ulek is dwarven, ruled by Korond, and they might easily be convinced to join Keoland if Keoland promises to help them beat orcs in the Pomarsh, because that's their shtick. So when you're doing, and then you've got all of these geographical features that we've been talking about, the Rushmoors and the Jotuns and the...
Speaking of the Rushmoors, another published adventure is right there in Northern Rushmoors, a cult of reptile god sits in there.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. So if you're using your, Living Greyhawk Journal or Living Greyhawk Gazetteer, I should say, you don't just look at Keoland, look at all of the...
Yeah, all those realms in the Sheldamar Valley. Yep.
Yep. Same thing if you're going old school and you're just going to use your box set. Do the same thing. And then you look at the locations there. And we're missing the whole stuff up north, which is where I'm less familiar with. And that is... the battle for that city. What is that city called?
Is this up in
Thornward.
Thornward. That is really the border of Bissell and Ket.
Yep.
Right along that river there. Is that the Verbabong? No, it's the False River. Sorry.
Yep, that's False right. River. And part of that city is owned by what is it, Valuna, and part of it is owned by Ket, and part of it is owned by the Grand March, if I remember correctly.
I think you're right, actually, yeah.
And the Grand March is ruled by, remember, it's ruled by the Knights of the Watch, which are technically loyal to Keoland. It makes for an interesting political situation over here.
Great place to seat a campaign.
What else can we talk about with Keoland here, Wiley?
I mean, that's, again, I'm not super well versed in this, so we're getting to the, I'm kind of scraping the the crumbs off the bottom of the pan here, if you will.
So, besides your Living Greyhawk Gazetteer, which was the last published setting book, you also have the Living Greyhawk Journal. Living Greyhawk journals were they originally came out as an independent magazine little thing that came with the I think it came with Dragon or Dungeon, I should say Dungeon, and they had stuff about the Living Greyhawk campaign crew, but they also had extra lore. And the Keoland article is written by Gary Hollian. It is everything that the editors dropped out of the Living Greyhawk Gazetteer because it was too much. So he submitted an article that was too big, and everything that was too big got into this article. Mm-hmm. And it outlines all of your, all of the most important, baronies, duchies, in Keoland. It gives them names, who's in charge, plot hooks. Mm. And at the end, there's this nice provincial key map. It's a hex map. And it gives you all 27 of the provincial areas. That's really cool. So we have more information on Keoland than most other realms. So those two, if you want those, the Living Greyhawk Journal number 1 and Living Greyhawk Gazetteer, those are both available on DM's Guild /DriveThruRPG.
Mm-hmm.
Easily able to get them. The other one is in Living Greyhawk Journal number 4, where Gary does an article on the Silent Ones of Keoland. The Silent Ones are this magical group within Keoland, So that he has a whole article about them. And if you play 3.5 or Pathfinder 1E, there's all sorts of stuff in there, mechanical stuff also that you can use. So those are your published sources, as well as little bits and pieces in your From the Ashes and From the Ashes, and then the box set. So that's quite a good chunk of stuff. So if you're new to Greyhawk and you want to start somewhere, and you want to start with your Ghosts of Saltmarsh campaign in 5e, I would grab Living Greyhawk Gazetteer and yep. Living Greyhawk Journal number 1. Read the stuff on Keyland, and you've got all the information you need to have fun.
Absolutely. And there's a lot to do there. So that's I think that's a good start on Keyland. As I mentioned at the start, we may have the opportunity to go a little deeper into some stuff with Keyland. So stay tuned if you're interested in learning more. But that gives you at least a look at the history. And again, I apologize for my just lack of understanding or knowledge of Keyland, but Mateus gathered some good resources for us. And, I'm excited to be, starting our next narrative. We started up in the Rakers, up in Radic, and now totally new characters, totally new narrative. We're down in Sterich, and really excited to get that going.
So, yeah. And my own home campaign takes place south of the Sea Princes, but it's in my timeline, Keyland controls that area. So
yep.
Yeah. All right.
Well, great. Well, so if you need more Keyland, stay tuned. We'll probably get there at some point. So interesting stuff. I learned a lot going through all this, and there, like Mateus rounded up there to wrap it up, there's a lot of material out there for it. So dig in and enjoy. Thanks for hanging out for another episode of Greycast, and be nice, be safe, and we'll see you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Greycast podcast, where we explore the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. Mateus and I are excited to share our passion for the world of Greyhawk with each of you. We'll drop episodes every other Monday featuring all things Greyhawk. Please refer us to all your cool, nerdy Greyhawkian friends and allies, even your most hated enemies at the gate. You can find our podcast on Spotify, and be sure to give us a follow on Twitter at Greycast576 to keep up with Greycast. Until next time, remember, it's a dangerous business going out your door. You step onto the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no knowing where you might be swept off to.